what's up YouTube? Perry here with Premier Guitar in Nashville, Tennessee today at Marathon Music Works. Hanging out with Animals as Leaders. Tosin, what's up, man? How are you today?
Good, how you doing?
It's great to see you again, dude. This is a pleasure. We're over here in Guitar World. We'll start with guitars and then we'll get into some kind of newer stuff with your gear.
Yeah.
But first and foremost, we got a ton of questions about your Ibanez SIG that everybody's seen you play. It's gorgeous.
Thanks.
That thing is so weird looking, man. Can we talk about that first?
Yeah, of course.
And then this is featuring your Fluence pickups, right?
Yeah. So this is a prototype I've been working on with Ibanez. It's an original design. It's inspired by a lot of the ergonomic guitars that I had custom made for me. I wanted to bring some of those design features into the Ibanez catalog. So it's a lightweight, super thin bodied guitar, huge cutaway
nice
here
scoop,
for your torso.
Yeah.
Really cool input location. And this cutaway allows for, like, if you do a classical seated position,
sure,
you can balance the guitar there. And if you do more of a traditional seating, you've got this cutaway, obviously. You have a ton of fret access. I mean, I literally can touch the 24th fret without much difficulty. This is a bolt-on construction because I like the sound of bolt-on guitars. And it also helps to keep the cost down just because of how manufacturing works with guitars.
What do you like about the sound of bolt-on? Is it a different sustain?
I mean, they're snappier. I mean, I haven't done an objective test on my own, but that is the consensus.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
And so, yeah. What's cool is this horn comes all the way up to the 12th fret, which allows us to sit the neck of the body so deep into the actual guitar that you have less of this wide arm sort of thing, and you can play a little bit more tucked in. With 8-string guitars, the scale lengths are longer, so a lot of them, you'll get on them and you feel like you're playing this big surfboard. So this small
body... Right, and
that
scale kind of looks pretty normal, relatively. I mean, even though it's a lot more access, but it doesn't feel like a huge...
Yeah, you know. Yeah. What's cool is we did a fan fret thing, which allows for a longer scale length in the bass, and then you can have a traditional scale length in the treble. So basically, it's 25 and a half inches, which is your standard, you know, electric guitar. I think most guitars are between 24.7 and 25 and a half. And then this is 27, which allows for, you know, complementary temperament and tension to...
Ah, that makes sense. It's not floppy.
It's not floppy.
Sure.
So my whole thing with this design was to make an 8-string guitar that didn't feel like a surfboard and un-guitar-like. So that whole fan fret thing allows for your bends and your vibrato to feel the same tension-wise. And it allows you to get that, like, really clear low end. And then I actually narrowed the string spacing, so it's more narrow. And that, you know... Once you subtract a little bit of space between a string, and you do it 8 times, you've really kind of taken off quite a bit.
Made yourself some room, yeah.
Yeah, so the width of this neck is really quite narrow compared to the average 8-string. So I think if you're a 6-string player or a 7-string player, this would be the most comfortable 8-string you could find, actually. I do a ton of lead work, and a lot of 8-strings are really geared towards kind of metal.
Sure.
And they don't necessarily, like... I think feel as great as they could. So this is supposed to be like a really playable 8-string. So
it's a beautiful concept.
Thanks.
I love it. So tell me more about the pickup. So when you guys, you know, I first found out about these from Ken Susie, you know, over at Fishman.
Yeah.
And he was like, dude, you got to come in here and hear these. It was at NAMM.
Yeah.
And I was kind of blown away. Those sound great.
Thanks.
Really, really good sounding.
Yeah, they're really cool. I don't know if you can see, but can you see that?
Ah.
We're actually charging this one.
So it's an active pickup?
It's a powered pickup.
A powered pickup, okay.
They prefer to say powered because active pickups have their own sound.
And that doesn't do
that. Yeah, I think the active sound you're used to kind of has like a hard limit on it, so they're known to be less dynamic and kind of compressed.
Sure.
These are powered just because of the technology. It's just not a passive magnet, but it feels like the middle ground between passive, and then you get a lot of the cool dynamic features you get out of an active pickup. For instance, there is some welcome compression that you get out of these. So for really detailed work, you're not really like losing information in the lower dynamic. The pickup does have a bit of like compression to it, but there's no ceiling on it. You're not hitting this hard limit with like preamp clipping. These just behave differently. So they're actually a coil. It's just like 48 layers that are printed as opposed to mechanically wound.
Awesome.
So you get 100% consistency. And you're not bound by the limitations of normally winding a pickup because that process is literally like you make a physical pickup, and if you don't like a feature of it, you've got to physically make another pickup.
Do it all again.
Yeah. Sure. How many winds? What type of magnet? Like, and then if you change, say that's too bright, well, that might affect the output of the pickup if you change that. If you change the output of the pickup, it might affect the low end clarity. Or if you change the resonant peak, you might be changing like beyond that the treble range of the pickup.
It's like always a compromise with traditional pickups.
Yeah, for sure. Everything's intrinsically tied. And a lot of guys have passive pickups that they love. I was one of them, but this is literally like, you know, almost like 4K television. It takes the sound that you're, the image that you're used to, and it just adds this like, this sharper version of it that is just like remarkable.
Like you didn't even know until you heard it, right?
Yes,
like, yeah,
yes.
You're almost like, oh, wow, that
and
is.
The A-B comparisons are where you really, you're just like, wow. It's kind of like when iPhone puts out a new iteration and you look at the old screen and you're like, I never knew that I was missing something until I'm like looking at this new thing.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
so,
interesting.
Yeah, so anyway, that's this, you know, this is just another one-off design. This one's really cool. It's got
a when the consumer model comes out, will it also be fan-fretted?
Yeah, it'll be virtually identical to this. Yeah, I like to spec my signatures exactly the way I play them.
Sure. Another thing I noticed immediately is that with extended range guitars, you're going to have a totally different neck shape than a traditional guitar. I mean, you couldn't call that a V or a C or anything like that. It definitely does its own.
Yeah, did you notice this one? This one's actually a teardrop shape.
It's like graded. It's
asymmetrical.
Sure.
It was an experiment. Basically, on a six-string guitar, I kind of like a fat neck. But on an extended range guitar, like a flat and thin neck, because when you're barring across that many strings, you don't want a baseball bat.
Totally.
But I think the baseball bat feel is good when you're doing a lot of legato stuff and you need that pivot point for your thumb.
For your thumb, sure.
Yeah, so I try to combine both. It's kind of hard to see, but yeah, it's kind of a teardrop shape that is flat and thin at the top and then kind of thick and round at the bottom.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Man, what an innovative, cool piece of gear, man.
Thanks.
Has it inspired any of the new stuff, like since you've had that particular guitar?
Yeah,
really?
I've been playing on it, and yeah, you know, it's kind of like my main guitar, and I've written a lot of stuff on it. So here's actually another guitar that I got probably in 2013. This is made by Ole Strandberg. This is actually number 8. This is the 8th guitar he's ever made.
Wow.
This one, he emailed me and was just like, hey, I got this idea for like a baritone 8-string. So you can see the fretboard extends beyond the
top 2 strings.
Yeah. So this is in A440, but when you get here, you have an A below standard, an octave below standard A, and then you have C sharp here. But if I was to capo this, I'd complete the nut and have a normal fretted guitar. So this goes as low as a 5-string bass. That's
wow.
C sharp, yeah. It's pretty cool.
That is fun, man.
Yeah, and then the neck here is actually asymmetrical as well, but it's in the other direction. This is a P1N1 concept by Rick Toon, intersecting planes. Instead of a round surface for your thumb, he kind of imagined flat surfaces, flat planes that were supposed to provide more stable, you know, a more stable surface for your thumb. So you're not rolling around, you're kind of planted like. So this has facets, it's 3 different planes. So
well, that's interesting, because depending on where you're playing, I mean, your hand naturally makes this shape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when it's in your hand, it kind of makes sense that you would be able to
scoot around. Yeah, because if you're doing a bend, maybe your thumb comes up the top. Well, you've got this sort of plane here, but if you're, you know, pushing from the bottom, it gives you kind of like this slanted surface to push upward on. And then on the back, it's also flat. So the idea is that it's more stable because you're not on like a curved surface, you're on a flat surface. It's pretty bold.
Very, very bold guitar. Is this thing chambered? It looks like it almost.
Yeah, it's a semi-hollow guitar. This has lace pickups in it. This was like a, you know, early thing that I got from Strandberg. I think he's evolved a bit, but this is pretty true to his current designs. And it's a personal favorite for sure.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And that toggle, what is that, just a 3-way?
Yeah, it's just a 3-way switch. There's cool. No coil tap or anything. And then I'm actually playing a 9-string guitar on this.
Look at this. Looks like you could land a jet on that thing. Oh my
yeah,
God.
This is an Ibanez Prestige 9-string. It has bare knuckle pickups in it, and I think they did a really good job with it. It has 2 truss rods in it. You can see these.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you can see that. So.
Wow.
Yeah, this goes down to C sharp. So it's similar to the Strandberg, but instead of nine strings, this is an eight string with an extended, like a baritone scale, and this is just a whole another string. So there's a song I play this on, and then...
Now, is the double truss rod because there's so many strings and the tension is so tight?
I think it's for the tension and the width of the neck.
That's a big old truss wide rods. Neck for sure.
Yeah. I'm also playing this Kiesel nylon string guitar. This design is cool because it doesn't actually have much acoustic quality to it. And I'm playing with a metal drummer and like loud wedges. So an acoustic would feed back and prove itself pretty difficult to use in this context. But this it's piezo direct and it allows me to play at loud volume but get that nylon string sound. So, and it kind of feels like an electric. It's interesting, like the neck
shape, looks like a little closer to a, you know, a standard guitar.
So it's a really cool hybridized sort of feel. You're not, you know, fighting the string tension and height of like a classical guitar, but you get that sound.
Right. Like, so a lot of time on gut string guitars, the action is just kind of out of control.
Yeah.
And that definitely looks lower.
This is low. I mean, you feel like you were playing a telly or something.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And what songs does this come? I've seen you play this, I guess, for the, like...
Braindance.
Braindance. Yeah.
And what's funny about that song is there's a ton of legato in it, and it's really hard to do on a normal classical, but because this feels like an electric neck, you're able to actually play almost like lead style phrases. Yeah, so.
Very, very cool, man. That is interesting.
Yeah, so those are the guitars.
Is that all you got with you?
That's all my guitars. There's some Javier's, but
and then
he'll cover
your signature over here. Are you on that pretty much all night, or?
Yeah. I play essentially one guitar unless some songs I have to play because the neck, you know, the extended range thing, or a nine string or a classical. But for the most part, everything I play is in standard tuning on my signature guitar.
Awesome. Last I read, I think you were really into the NYXLs. Are you still playing those?
Yeah, they're dope. The D'Addario NYXLs are. I don't really know the mojo behind them, but they feel great. They seem to retain that new string sound a little longer. I've never broken one, and they're just kind of like...
Are they coated for people that haven't played them?
I don't feel a textural difference. Yeah. I don't think that they're coated, but they must be doing something different in the manufacturing.
It's a different core or something, possibly. Yeah,
but they're dope.
And how hard is it for you to find, obviously you're on tour and you know, have a tech and you're doing this, but like, for example, your nine string, can you just go buy a set of strings for that, or is that something you're piecing together with eight string
sets?
You usually
have to build them. I mean, yeah. I work with D'Addario and they send me individual strings and that's how I build my packs, but normally you buy like a six string set and you buy individual seven and eight.
Totally.
Or nine if you're doing that.
Cool, yeah. Just wondered about that. Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about some amps.
Cool.
All right, Tosin, this setup looks a little different than previous setups, typically. Mm. And, you know, you were a very, very early champion of modeling amplifiers and Fractal and stuff like that, which I see.
Yeah.
But I'm also looking at a Morgan, which is something I would never have naturally associated you with, considering they're pretty known for, like, being, you know, low wattage, really loud, lots of headroom amps.
Yeah.
So tell me about this change.
I stumbled upon Morgan's amps when I was working with Seymour Duncan. They had one in their, you know, in their studio that they used just for listening to new pickups. And I plugged into it and I was like, supposed to be listening to my pickups, but I was actually like, yo, what amp is this? We stuck their Palladium pedal in front of it and it just sounded huge. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. What is this thing? So they were kind enough to hit up Joe Morgan and then he and I started talking and I started playing this SW50R, which is kind of like, I think it's like loosely based off of a Dumble.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
kind of like, I think he might have been working on one for a client and he kind of like was able to kind of one up the design that he saw.
Wow.
And I mean, this thing sounds great. It's like incredibly transparent, but it takes pedals really well. So I've been actually using it as my clean tone, but also the platform for all of my drives. So my high gain distortions, my crazy slap stuff, all the leads are just various drive pedals going into the Morgan.
Wow.
So yeah, it's and you can't do that with every clean amp. Some of them, they're way too, you stick a distortion pedal in front of like a Fender Twin or something and it's like,
it sounds
buzzsaws.
It sounds not great, but
yeah.
How, as opposed to getting like, you know, distortion from an amp. I don't know how long it's been since you've played like a standard, you know, amp, just with amp distortion. Like, how, what's the difference? Is it like more responsive with pedals, or like, do you notice a difference in the gain? I tend to feel like wide open tube amps sound awesome for distortion, but then you can't really, that's the one trick you're gonna get out of it,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the type of distortion we go for is extremely focused, very tight low end.
Precision kind of
gain. Yeah, yeah. So I think a good high gain pedal, like a well-made, you know, pedal will do the trick, and then you just basically have all the power amp compression out of a quality tube head. I mean, the output transformers that he's using in these things are like, I mean, they're really expensive, and it's almost like driving a car with a really like a V12 engine, naturally aspirated, super like throttle response is just there. It's got tons of power.
Just like, we'll keep going.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like this, as a platform, that's what this is. But then the strange thing is I'm talking about all this, you know, output and power, but it sounds incredibly clean. You can get it to break up if you want, like if you dime that white knob, but I've got tons of headroom. So when I put that distortion pedal in front of it, you hear this huge tone, but there's a ceiling. It's not like it's like anywhere close to like clipping, you know, there's kind of this like open headroom to it, which is, it's just great. I really like the feel and sound of it.
It's an interesting evolution in how you go about your tone. I noticed that the Axe FX is on, so I'm guessing you're using it for something still, right? Maybe
yeah,
effects?
I'm using the Fractal here just as a glorified like delay and reverb for my nylon string.
Wow, so, okay, that's totally different.
Yeah, there's no Fractal, like my tone that you hear live is all the pedals and the Morgan. So basically pedals go into the front of the Morgan, not even, there's no effects loop on this amp. So it's all into the front of it. And then that goes, the output of that goes to this Two Notes Torpedo Live, which is basically a load box and an IR for cabs. And the reason I do that is mic placement can change and mics can get knocked.
That allows you to go direct.
Yeah, but what's cool is because it's a load box, it's getting all of the like impedance and load from the head. So all of the dynamics of the head are speaking to the Two Notes. So we've done like, you know, A-B comparisons, and I actually like, it's fine to just go direct with this. But on stage, I do have this Bogner 412. This is front loaded. It's got, I think V30s and T75s in it. It's an X pattern.
Yeah.
I've just been talking to Reinhold Bogner recently, and like, he was kind enough to get us these for this tour. It sounds great. It's essentially for stage volume. And then behind you, I have the Morgan 212 open back cab.
Interesting.
Yeah. I use this as a side fill just because.
Like to monitor yourself?
Yeah. So I'll be downstage. I've got this cab that, you know, if I come back here, if I want to rock out, it's a 412, it's closed back. And then this guy, I can always hear from the side in case the stage doesn't have side fills or if I want another reference point.
Sure.
I'm just surrounded by myself. It's nice.
How
but
fun.
The open back thing is great because it definitely has a radius that's different than a closed back cab. And I think for the cleans, there's just like a breathing that, you know.
I've noticed with open back cabs, like the cleans just, it's a totally different sound. It's mind blowing. It really is. And a lot of metal guys I don't think would have ever even tried an open back cab because it's so foreign to heavy music almost.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But
it's cool to see you experimenting with stuff that you wouldn't normally associate with, like, you know, your style of music.
Well, good tone lurks everywhere.
It does, you're right.
So it's cool to see what the country guys are doing and what the like fusion guys are using for drives and, you know, various things.
Yeah.
Like,
are you that guy that's like always chasing the dragon? Like just constantly?
Yeah, but I'm also the guy who's like now a professional touring musician and like, you definitely want things to be kind of a well-oiled machine. You want to eliminate variables and you want to have consistency. And so I try not to just arbitrarily
change stuff just to do it.
Yeah, but I still just slot stuff in all the time.
For sure. Well, speaking of that, let's take a look at this board.
Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, Tosin, this is always my favorite part of a rundown is when I get to hear the fun stuff you're making all the noise with. But before that, I have a technique question because you have a guitar on now, but I see you playing with picks and without picks, and how do you, you know, dictate what's gonna get a pick, what's not? It's just such an interesting style.
Yeah, certain techniques, like I do a lot of the slap stuff. It's kind of like a, like alternate picking with your thumb.
lot. You get those cool triplets and stuff in there too.
So yeah, it's like a Victor Wooten, Reggie Wooten sort of thing that I've started applying to guitar. And when you have this many strings, it's really cool to be able to utilize an open right hand, because then you can get a lot of the...
So interesting. Wow. Man, I love it. I just had to ask about that real quick. Yeah. And then as far as picks go, like, are you really picky about your pick?
I am picky about my picks.
All right, let's talk about it.
Pun intended. These are Primetone. It's a signature pick I'm doing with Dunlop.
Oh, wow.
Primetone is a material that they've come up with. And it's like the size of a Jazz 3, but I mean, these things never wear down. And they have a different feel. It's like that really beveled, almost like, you remember like Red Bear picks or I think it's like kind of targeting that feel, which is really dope. I really like them.
And as far as density, is it like a pretty...
It's 1.4 millimeters.
Oh, okay. Wow.
It's thick, but not... I mean, yeah, it's pretty thick.
It's pretty thick, yeah. I mean, that's a pretty dank little pick you got there.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. All right, well, now onto pedals. So, walk me through the chain. Obviously, you're going through the Octaswitch, which must make your life a little bit easier.
Yeah, so... The Karl Mountain Octaswitch is a, you know, loop switcher that allows you to individually input pedals. They all have a location, and then you build presets essentially by flipping up
little dip switches
that, you know, relate to which position the pedal is in. So I have this, you know, it's kind of like a linear signal where I go in through the tuner and then I hit this KHDK clean boost, which is a really nice clean boost. Basically, I use it just to get the Morgan to be like louder, because we'll have clean guitar, but it's got to cut through another eight string guitar and drums. So I want that signal to be clean without breaking up, but I need it to be louder.
Excited, almost. Yeah,
yeah. So. So yeah,
difference.
Yeah.
Is that like an always on kind of pedal?
It used to be. Now I'm like, I don't want it to drive my distortion pedals too much. So I've started using it specifically when I have clean parts, like say I need to, I don't know, like a... You good? So when I need that stuff to cut above the mix, I'll kick it on.
Sure.
And then another clean boost I have is this Harlow pedal. Now this is a collaboration between Rupert Neve and Reinhold Bogner, which is like insane.
That is crazy. So is it like a Neve pre or something like that, or does it give you that vibe?
Yeah, I think it's kind of got that discrete Neve pre circuitry sound, like, and then it also has like a transformer, like a mini transformer
inside of
the
box.
Pedal. Yeah, and so it's a really cool. I think they describe it as a compressor for people who don't like compression.
Sure.
So like, I have it pretty. Moderately set.
Yeah, it looks pretty conservative.
So if I was to do something like... I mean, it's like pretty crazy. So like, you know what I mean?
Huge difference, yeah.
Yeah, I really, really dig it. And it's great for clean parts that I need to cut too as well. If I'm doing something even as simple as like... It just excites the signal. It gives a little bit of like, almost like power amp compression.
I was gonna say it almost sounds like a type of compression, almost like a piece of outboard gear, really.
Yeah, it's a great pedal because it feels like you got your amp louder. That's the type of compression you get, as opposed to this squashing, narrowing thing. You feel like you've turned up your amp. It's like a genius thing.
It almost is counterintuitive, because when you hear it kicked on, it doesn't sound. I mean, it's slightly compressed, but it almost sounds bigger in a way. Yeah.
Sounds you're a lot bigger. The image expands. It's really, really dope. So then I have various drive pedals. I have more drive pedals in gain stages than anything else on this board. So incrementally, if I go from preset 1 to 2, we get to my slap tone, which I'm using the Friedman BE OD pedal. This is basically, I mean, Friedman does great stuff. Yeah. It's almost like a Marshall from heaven with like a modern, like tight low end and gain structure. So that's what this guy. So I use that. There's a trim pod inside the pedal. You can gain it down. So I've got it internally gained down, and then I keep the gain like really quite low on it. Just because for that sound, you don't really need a ton of distortion. The strings kind of do the, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's what I use for my slap sounds. And you even do some, let's see. Super attacky, like
zippy.
Yeah. So I love that. And if we go to the next preset, it's another Friedman pedal that I have EQ'd and gained differently.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And this is just my straight rhythm tone. Right?
Crazy.
Yeah, and then the next preset is my lead tone. Now, there's a guy in Tokyo named Shun Nokina who builds these really cool handmade pedals. The brand's called Latique, so this is one of his pedals that he sent me. And it's a really cool, really warm, mid-rangey sort of sound. So let's see. You know?
Yeah.
So actually, we're on tour with Periphery, and Misha Mansour has started a company called Horizon.
Yeah.
And I was using this pedal with a different boost. So here's the pedal without the boost, you know. And then with the boost.
Focuses it a little more.
It totally focuses it. It kind of, we got it trimming off a lot of low end, and you get that slicey sort of you know, so you get all that pick attack, and my hands are freezing.
Yeah. I'm seeing this happen with my eyes, and my brain cannot process everything that is coming out of the speaker cabinet. It's blowing my mind. And it is freezing in here. Obviously, you guys can't tell that. So my mind is blown that you can even play this right now.
I'm attempting to. So that's my lead tone, and you can hear some delays, right? So basically, I just got this timeline pedal from Strymon, which is really cool. I just have it set on like 500 milliseconds. And I'm using a Big Sky as well. So this is probably my favorite part of having these pedals is the Strymon stuff is just gorgeous.
That's beautiful.
And you can do really,
like a beautiful nightmare.
It does.
So, and that's the Big Sky and the timeline together.
Yeah, but most of that was the Big Sky.
Sure.
Yeah, that crazy, I call it like whale sex sounds or something. So I have a basic reverb that's kind of just like, And then I have the crazy. And then I have something in between that's kind of like a.
Yeah, definitely a little more subtle, but still sounds like David Attenborough should be talking over it. You know, the guy from like Planet Earth and all of that.
Here we see the female seahorse.
Totally,
yeah. Another drive pedal I have is the Carl Martin Plexitone. So Carl Martin, they make this loop switcher, but they also make a really great sounding drive. So I use this for like when I need that sort of mid gain. And what's cool about this pedal is that it has three functions. Like, so there's that sort of crunch setting that I was just using. And then you can actually kick in a higher gain setting if you want. So. And then you could boost it. It's like having three channels in a single pedal.
I was
going to
say, that's a lot of dynamic overdrive for one pedal. That's kind of handy.
Yeah, they killed it with this design because it's literally kind of like three channels, you know? It's great. And then I've recently incorporated this Bogner. It's the red channel, I think, from the Ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really warm mid-rangey. So if I did something like a... Wait a second. I use that when I want a lead that doesn't have a ton of top end to it. It's kind of more of a, it reminds me of something like a Holdsworth sound, you know? Just super warm.
Yeah.
Right. So, okay, those are all the drives. And then I guess I'm forgetting this pedal here. It's an Empress parametric EQ. And basically, it allows me to kind of dial in frequencies that are missing, like specifically in the mid-range, because the Friedman drive pedals don't have a mid knob.
Yeah.
They got everything else, but no mids, and mids are huge. So let me see. If I just play with it off, you get this. Then you get that clawing low mid, you know?
Fills it right out.
Yeah. So that's a great pedal too. Paul Reed Smith actually was like, check out this pedal.
He turned you onto that.
He sent it to me.
What a badass.
Yeah.
What a cool
that guy
dude.
Knows his stuff. So this pedal really came together as a happy accident, but yeah, I think that's basically it. Other than I'm using his Frey sampler. It's a boomerang pedal.
Is that just for some atmosphere?
No, I use it for functional stuff too. Like I might do like, let's see here. Mm-hmm. I mean? Yeah. You could just loop yourself.
Totally. Yeah, that's fun.
It was clipping my pedals. I mean, the levels weren't quite set, but yeah, I use that. It's always been a part of my setup, and I've written with it. And
I was going to say, it has to go into your writing.
Yeah, there's a ton of you can do. It's really cool. And then I think all we have left is the ISP decimator, which is just a really cool, inobtrusive noise suppressor.
And it, like, I noticed during soundcheck that thing is really working. And it's not sucking your tone out, you know, like.
You want to hear how well it's working?
Yeah.
Let's see.
Wow.
So without that, that's what it
is. Holy shit.
So I got a lot of gain going.
How much are you sacrificing in terms of like finger response and sustain?
Virtually nothing.
Wow.
I mean, it just like, it's cool. I mean, the way it actually like cuts the noise is like, some suppressors feel like a door, like the threshold is really hard and you've either got a signal or you don't.
Like it's gated or something really hard. Yeah,
this is softer, but it works extremely well. I just think they've somehow figured it out.
So, that's awesome.
And then I got a polytune for a tuner.
Sure. Well, damn, dude, I guess that about covers it.
Yeah, that's everything.
Hey, man, I can't tell you how much I appreciate this. This is very, very cool. I'm excited for the show tonight. And we're going to go talk to Javier about some more guitars and stuff.
Sounds good.
All right, now we're back in Guitar World with Javier. Javier, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. Man, you've got some cool signature stuff going on. I'd love to talk about it. One thing that really kind of sticks out to me is, don't you have an 8 or 9 string Strat?
Yeah, this guy right here. So it's a ESP. Vintage Plus Strat, essentially. It's an 8-string single coil. I wanted to stay true to the Strat, you know, idea. And it's, I think, one of the first few 8-strings with this little bridge over here.
Little trim?
I think Stephen Carpenter has the first.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love it because it's like such a traditional look for such a non-traditional guitar.
Yeah. The older that I get, I ended up, you know, kind of falling into this more traditional sort of vibe. I never thought I would have like a Strat type of guitar, but you know, I eventually got a Vintage Plus from ESP and I fell in love with the guitar and I was like, well, all right, let me see if I can get a 8-string version of it. And I just told them to do that. I was like, you know, just build it up for an 8-string. The profile of the neck is for my signature guitar. I was like, all right, I already have that. I'm used to that. Why start again?
Sure.
Maple fretboard. It has the inlays from my signature guitar as well. A little abalone up in there. And then the, you know, 8-in-row headstock, which I think looks awesome.
Sure. That's so rad. I mean, was the Strat like your first guitar or was this just like...
Not even, man. I had one of my first guitars. I was like a Dean.
You know, sure. Totally. Yeah.
Something like that. Bought from the local music store or whatever.
Crate head.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, totally.
Exactly.
I was there, you know, too.
Little gig bag and cheap cables. But like I said, you know, I never thought I would get one. And being endorsed, I was like, hey, let me just try one.
That? Yeah, totally.
They were like, yeah, absolutely.
Hey, man, that rules.
And I fell in love with it. So, you know, I had the opportunity to get a custom guitar. I was like, let's go hard.
Let's do it. Yeah. All right, obvious question. If you're on the higher register strings, does it respond or even sound at all like a Strat?
Absolutely.
Really? Cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really cool.
It sounds phenomenal. And so the pickups also are DiMarzio. What I had them do was take their standard Strat setup and just put it exactly.
Extend it.
Yeah. You know, there'll be some differences with wound, you know, it being wound long, you know, more copper rather. But it sounds great.
Yeah.
It sounds like, you know, a Strat. You know, I compare it to the Vintage Plus that I have, the 6-string, and it's on par.
That's interesting. It's kind of the best of both worlds for you guys because you're obviously playing some heavy stuff, but your cleans are really clean.
Yeah.
And that spanky Fendery kind of thing, I'm sure it really helps.
It does. And it's awesome with this Floyd as well. I mean, I think when H first started, everybody was like, okay, having a Floyd on there is going to be too much. You're going to have too much flopping.
It's got to be the first one
happening.
I've seen.
But it works great, you know.
And the tension is good.
The tension is great. I don't have any tuning issues. You know, if I go ham on it, sure, but I think that happens on a normal 6-string
anyway. Sure.
So I'm not encountering any extra problems that people were, you know, expecting. So I don't know, maybe you'll start seeing these a little bit more.
That's gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like it's got a kind of a little more severe of a break angle on the neck than a normal guitar.
Yeah.
And a little volute too to stop it from breaking. That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine. I mean, this is a dual truss rod neck as well.
Absolutely.
Oh, there's got to be some serious tension on that.
Absolutely. I think for any extended range guitars, you need to have some reinforcement.
Reinforcement, for sure.
Yeah, either carbon fiber, dual truss rod.
No, is this a bolt-on neck?
It is.
Cool. And is it a four? Yeah, wow,
yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Very cool.
There's a little plate, but...
Well, and they kind of give you a little roundness back here to get up there into the higher frets.
Yeah, it's a great guitar, man. As soon as I got it, I was like, wow, this is... plays amazing.
It's too cool.
You know, it's a little
and it looks slick.
It is, it is.
It looks super cool.
I need to get now some gold teeth.
Yeah, get so you some fronts. Just match, just be blinging up there. All right, cool, what else we got?
So we have this. Then my signature 8-string is this guy over here.
I've seen you play this quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous, man. That maple is awesome.
Yeah, this is my workhorse. So it's quilt maple top, ash body, walnut, padauk, and maple.
Is this a neck through design?
It is. Yeah.
All the way, huh?
It's, all the way. Things it looks pretty.
It's gnarly, dude.
Yeah, pretty awesome. I think for it being a manufactured guitar, I think probably one of the sickest guitars that you can probably get.
If I were to go to the store right now and buy one, it would be
$1,300.
Just like this.
Just like this. Just like
this. It's awesome.
Yeah. We updated it too. But the first version had a painted back, so you could hardly see the wood.
Yeah. See, I like the natural finishes better.
Me too. Yeah. And I had a high gloss neck and everything, so we got rid of that. Everything has a satin finish now.
Is it much faster on the neck?
Yeah. A lot smoother. It feels great. You know.
Painted necks, I've noticed, or lacquered necks or whatever, I mean, really slow me down because your finger will catch if you're sweaty.
Exactly. And it tends to, anything's on your hand, it can get stuck to it as well. We switched up, it used to have a Honus bridge, and now we switched it to just normal hip shot, and we got a little creative with using some gold little saddles and then
Matches everything. Yeah, I like it. This is great.
Yeah, you know, I already had the gold features, and if I switched it up to just black, I was like, it's going to be a little...
It won't look as.
Yeah. Exactly.
Now, are these pickups something that already existed, or is this something?
Yes and no. I mean, it's been a few years now. These are DiMarzio Eclipse 8s, were essentially my signature pickups. Spent some time with Steve Lucher at DiMarzio designing them. I think we went through like 9 or 10 pickups or something like that. Have a kind of a single coil-ish tone to it. So, in a lot of highs.
Is there like a coil tap?
There is a coil tap here. I rarely use it.
Is that because it's already doing its
kind
thing?
Go into the second or fourth fourth position, it already has that quality. Someone might find a use for it. I haven't yet. We put it there just because we could. We were talking about maybe getting rid of it, but it was like, why not? Who cares?
Yeah. Maybe for recording, you might find that it does something different.
Yeah. You know, I haven't used it, but someone will. So quilt might be maple top, ebony fretboard, perloid inlays.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
The gold makes it pop too, man. That's really great.
Yeah.
And it also looks like it doesn't look as severe, the break angle on the neck, but I love that it also has a volute, because with that much tension on the string, you're be a lot less likely to snap that.
Yeah, absolutely. This guy, so.
It's a crazy looking headstock too. Awesome, awesome.
Yeah. And cool. You know, it's essentially like the Mystique body of ESP in 8 when I went over to them.
Is it the exact same size?
Oh, it's a little bit bigger.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it looks a lot more substantial.
It's a little bit bigger. When I see a 6-string, it's like, whoa, that's the
tiny
baby version.
Yeah, like a little Tysco.
But yeah, you know, when I went over to them, I was like, look, I want something new, but I also want to still keep it ESP. And they didn't have anything with that body in the extended range, so I was like, hey, let's do an 8-string, and they're more than willing, so.
Those guys are great.
That was awesome.
Super cool.
And then I have this little weird guy.
Oh, you got a little Strandberg too?
Strandberg, yeah. So this is number 63, made by Ola himself.
Wow.
It's pretty awesome. At this point, I was kind of already starting to be into that Fender world, so I kind of wanted to rip.
The pick guard kind of.
Yeah.
It's a throwback, but man, this thing looks so foreign.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not even close.
Like, it's not even, and it feels so different. I mean, it's slight.
Is it?
When I first got it, it took me a while to get used to, because my other eights are
sure
a little bit more substantial in weight, and this
even having like a headstock on it, like the centrifugal force feels different when you're moving, you know, because it's
yeah
pulling
and
more.
Then these necks also,
what in the world,
are pretty different. So
that is definitely different.
Yeah, it's a bit of a trapezoidal neck.
Yeah, but compensated per
location.
Location.
Exactly.
That's so weird.
So the idea is that you have this plane that your thumb,
sure,
you know, slides along. It's great. It's a great design. And then in addition, we have these two extra frets, which we're realizing is kind of hard to figure out how to tab. Tab it.
Oh.
Because technically this is the zero fret. You know what I mean?
And that would be way below
like
zero.
Negative one or negative two or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But yeah, and these also are the same pickups that I have in my signature guitar. It sounds drastically different in this guitar for multiple reasons. You know, less wood. It's also chambered.
Oh, is it? Wow.
Yeah, it is a chambered guitar.
And they also look offset as compared to your other
correct,
model.
Correct. But they sound pretty beefy in this guitar. It's kind of awesome.
It's an oddball, but it's cool for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It's a pretty great guitar. All these little features are like functional.
They're all functional, like for playing, yeah.
You
it's
know,
like, it's not like a Flying V that looks cool, but what are you going to do with it? Like,
yeah.
Unless you're playing live, you're not going
to,
yeah.
Yeah, you kinda have to practice.
It's going to slide, yeah.
Yeah, this is great. You know, I love this guy.
Very
super
cool.
And that's about it with guitars.
Well, right on, man. Let's go take a look at some pedals and some amps.
Let's do it.
All right, Javier, here we are at the fun part.
Cool.
You are an Axe-Fox guy, right?
I am.
Okay, so what, you know, when you first started diving into that, especially for this record, are you going after a specific amp sound, or is that, or was it just?
I think we generally, both Tosin and I, tend to go for almost Marshally, you know, super Marshally type of tones. We would always mess with Friedman's in the Axe FX. That kind of became the bulk of our tones. You know, through experimenting, I eventually just, you know, figured out the few amps that I typically use, and I kind of stick to that. And I try to treat it like a real amp, where just, you know, EQ here and there, gain, maybe some presence. And I don't really dive in too crazy.
Too crazy, sure.
Yeah, I hung out with Matt Picone from Fractal, and you know, he's like, look, if you don't know what it is, don't mess with it. And that,
great advice.
Yeah, that kind of just worked.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I love the Axe FX. I mean, it's pretty versatile.
It's crazy and consistent, which is
and really consistent.
Nice.
Yeah.
And from sound, judging from soundcheck, sounds great. I mean, it really does. It's,
yeah.
If I were to A-B it at a quiet room blindfolded, I mean, I don't know that I would be able to immediately identify the difference.
Yeah, you know, when we were doing this last album, we actually spent two whole days in the studio tracking real amps, and they sound amazing. You know, it did take a long time to make all the little adjustments. When I went home after, I was like, all right, let me compare it to the Axe FX, and we ended up just using the Axe FX for the rest of the album. Cause
wow.
It was extremely, extremely close. Sometimes, if not better or cleaner.
Which makes sense. It's a direct signal and it's clean.
Yeah, right? there's no noise. It was amazing. I remember texting Matt Picone, being like, "You guys really did something special, man." Like that, we went in the studio trying to disprove
sure.
the Axe FX in some regards and. Couldn't
do it. Couldn't do it.
Yeah, couldn't do it.
Mind-blowing, man.
Yeah,
very,
yeah.
Very cool. So when you're switching sounds, like fundamental sounds between clean and dirty, are you switching amps within the Axe FX?
Absolutely.
Cool.
So I have a variety of things happening. I have, generally, I have a high gain, mid gain, which I use for my slapping, and then cleans. My high gain will be, I'm using two amps, left and right. One is a Friedman, one is the FAS 6160, I believe, which is like the PV.
5150,
exactly.
Sure, sure.
Two different cabs as well. In the Friedman, I'm using this Basket Wave TV mix that is in the Fractal. And then I have an Uber Shaw cab, which that is in real life.
Sure.
So, kind of.
Wow, the cab impulses is something I've never even gotten a chance to dive into. Like, have you ever A-B'd the difference
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Pretty dead
yeah,
on.
Yeah, it's impressive what they did with the with all their IRs. It's they nailed it, you know. And you can hear the difference like between different cabs and.
Sure. Yeah. So I guess when I first started diving into the Axe FX, I guess, yeah, I mean, my go-to, I mean, I think like my native tongue musically is metal. So obviously I went right for the 5150 just right. because that was my first real amp as a kid. And that's like, you know, an amp I know really, really, really well. For your gain tones, are you using that plus other stuff or is that?
No,
it's
no.
pretty much that.
Yeah, I rarely like to use a, you know, a drive block inside the Axe FX. I feel like it tends to take away at my low end. So I just use the amp gain, you know, crank it up as much as I need to. And that's kind of the tone, especially with using a combination of amps.
Sure.
You can get a lot done.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And this controller makes life easy because you're not tap dancing. It's not a huge board. And if you've got it mapped out like clean, crunch,
exactly.
filth,
that's what I do. It's like, it's my high gain, mid gain, clean. This is my lead, and then this is like a quieter lead for like wet,
subtly kind
of. Yeah, wet, you know, reverb sort of tone.
So it doesn't wash out on you?
Exactly.
Gotcha, that's interesting.
And then I still have instant accesses.
So I know that you have, you know, a clean, a kind of dirt and like a real legitimate
gain.
Yeah. And I think we talked the 5150 is kind of like the base for the really high gain stuff.
Yeah.
Inside of the Axe FX, obviously.
A combination of the 5150 and the Freedman.
Oh, the Freedman,
HPE.
Sure. Cool.
Yeah.
Those things rip, man.
They do.
They're awesome.
They
awesome.
Sound awesome.
But would it be possible to hear the difference between, you know, the clean, mid, and then your heavy distortion?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So my clean tones.
About as clean as you'd ever want to be.
Pretty clean, yeah, you know. My high gain. Pretty nasty. And then more of a slap that we'll use for, you know, all the slapping stuff that we do.
Crazy. Yeah. You guys, literally every single time I hear a new record of yours or see one of you guys play live, it makes me want to take all of my gear and throw it right out the window. It hurts my brain almost. It's
sometimes
hard to comprehend.
I want to do that. It's just like, why do we write it so hard?
Cool. And then the submachine you mentioned, there wasn't anything dead on in the Axe FX, but this thing kind of has its own sound. Could I hear it?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is the tone. I'll have like a somewhat clean-ish tone that I run it through. And then,
it almost has like an octave fuzz kind of vibe. Like it's adding a little something.
Well, it is. It's, so it's a fuzz and an octaver.
Okay.
And then I have up to two. So it's giving me a low and a high.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome that you have as much, there's a fuzz knob, so you can add or take away the sub as well. It makes it a little really fatty, you know? Mm-hmm. Your tone and volume, pretty simple.
So cool.
Yeah. And then the Harlow, again.
Impressed with that Harlow.
It's awesome.
It is rad.
It's very cool. So here in this clean patch, I can bring it, there's a part in the set where I need to loop something I don't want to create a whole other patch, so what I just did is put an EQ that brings the volume down.
So it's the exact same tone, just a little bit quieter.
It's just quieter. There's nothing happening to the actual tone.
It's like
just
perceived difference in tone because of the volume.
Yeah, it'll be during a solo section. I don't need that patch to be that loud. And I'm going to be looping, so I'm going to be stacking up my parts, which is just going to be louder.
It's going to be loud,
Yeah. I have
a little fairies in there. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to add a little bit more. Some extra delay, some compression.
So cool.
Yeah. The XFX has like an octaver.
Sure.
And it works great, but this submachine also works great and it has a very particular tone. We were experimenting when we were doing the album and we were like, hey, that sounds great. I sort of can replicate it in the XFX, but it just behaves differently going
through the pedal. The response is different, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So keeping it true to the album, it feeling a little bit more comfortable, I kept that pedal.
I get that.
And then the same thing with this Harlow. It's a bit of a compression pedal. Reinhold Igneter said it was a compression for people who don't like compression.
That's what Tosin just told me.
Yeah.
And typically, you know, you find like you know, a metal guy, I feel like compression is very much associated with clean, spanky ass tellies and stuff like that. But there's absolutely a place for it in metal. Although it took everyone a while to figure that out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it sounds like that kind of is
for leads as well. It's great. It's an awesome pedal, you know, super sensitive, but
and it looks like you have it set relatively conservatively as well.
Yeah, I don't go, it can go a little too far, you know, but
push you over the top, huh?
But yeah, I mean, want to hear it.
Yeah.
So this is the tone without it.
Huge difference in volume. It's more of a
yeah.
It just gives it
more breath. Bite. More
yeah,
like,
yeah.
More roundness to the bottom. That attack on the top is a little bit more present as well. So, especially for the finger picking.
Yeah. Now, hearing it off, it almost feels like it's essential for the quiet and the tapping parts and stuff, you know?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, it's a great pedal. Super
yeah,
cool.
Man. Well, it's a real clean, easy setup. I mean, I noticed in the background you have a Port City, but you're not, that's just a backup, right?
It's my backup. That was my main power amp, if you will. I was using it essentially as a power amp.
To power the XFX?
To power my cabs.
Cabs, okay, all right.
Everything that I hear in my ears and front of house is all XFX, and then I have a dual signal going out to the cabs that have that doesn't have any cab sims, so that way I can get a little bit of both worlds.
Sure, the best of both, yeah.
Yeah, we used to just do, you know, the direct signals and bring full range speakers and wedges and
like powered.
Yeah, yeah. And it never really had that rock show vibe, you know. So I think,
well, at least this way you can feel yourself on stage, which
absolutely
is totally foreign. If you guys have ever played an XFX with no cab and just direct, it's almost like being in studio. It's like,
yeah,
it doesn't feel natural.
Yeah, might as well be playing through like an iRig on an iPad, you know?
Totally,
like,
right, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, this way we get best of both worlds. You know, if we get to a stage where it feels weird or I can't hear this, I can't hear myself, take my ear out, crank up my cab, and
it's like a real,
it's like a show, yeah, normal yeah show. And then it's for, you know, if you're playing smaller venues, and you're still going direct with an XFX, it's gonna be beneficial to have that cab because anybody in front of you needs to hear that. You know, PAs are usually shooting
right
above
the first
them.
Four rows are not gonna hear anything.
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly.
Well, man, I really appreciate you taking the time, Javier.
Right on, thank you.
Appreciate that, man. Your band is incredible. You know, if you guys are out and about and happen to see Animals as Leaders on tour, you should definitely check it out. Go have your mind blown, as my mind has been blown. This whole new record is, you know, I feel like almost a huge departure from your later, you know, earlier stuff, because it's, the songs are shorter, they feel almost a little more musical. Man, it's its own thing. I love where you guys are taking Prague and how it's evolving into its own thing.
It's progressing.
It is progressing, which is odd. Cool, man.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't forget to sign up for PG Perks, your all-access pass to exclusive gear giveaways and discounts on PremierGuitar.com.